Howdy, listener, and thanks for tuning into our podcast, The Movie Log, A Journey Through Cinema. My name is Izzy.
And my name is David. Each week, one of us will pick a movie that the other has not seen. We will deep dive into our individual takes and historical background of the movie.
Please subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Instagram at TML A Journey Through Cinema and Twitter at TML A Journey.
Hi, everybody. Today we are traveling to the Pacific Northwest to the secluded Shadow Mountains in 1983. Our pick this week is the 2018 action horror film Mandy, starring Nicolas Cage, Andrea Riseborough, and Linus Roach. Directed by Panos Cosmatos and written by Cosmatos and Aaron Stewart Ahn. Before we begin, we would like to remind our listeners that this is a horror film, so we'll be talking about blood, gore, and murder, along with heavy drug and religious references that are throughout the film. Red Miller, played by Nicolas Cage, and Mandy Bloom, played by Andrea Riseborough, lead a very peaceful existence outside of society. When their secluded home is savagely destroyed by a cult led by the sadistic Jeremiah Sand, Red is forced into a vengeful journey that ends with a fiery showdown.
So this was a pretty heavy story to follow, and even watching it for the second time, I found new things out while watching it. Did you enjoy slash follow this movie?
I liked the film, and I told you at the beginning I was having a little bit of time staying awake. Not because of the film was bad, it's because there was this very dreamlike scene where they're talking in a very monotone, dreamy, quiet tone, and it was that perfect sound that started putting me to sleep because I was just tired. But once I got past that scene and everything was fine, it was a great, I thought it reminded me a lot about some of the films I saw when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, these what they would call midnight movies. I really enjoyed the horror aspect, the campy, there's some campiness woven through. There's definitely things that are in there that are pushing the edge of decent tastes and things like that, which I enjoyed. And so, yeah, overall, I'd say when I walked away from the film, I enjoyed it. And there's a lot to it. And I'm pretty sure if I watched it again, I would catch more to it.
So the movie is called Mandy after Andrea Riseborough's character, yet she's only in the first act. Do you think that she's important to the story, Mandy?
No, they just picked the random character named the movie after her.
Well, of course, it's a leading question.
But honestly, to ask your question, yes, she's important to the story because she drives Nicolas Cage through the rest of the film. Her being taken away from him and killed forces him to not only go back into his former life. We get this idea that he's probably a veteran for multiple reasons. One, he's in 1983, he's living in the woods, he's a logger, he's very isolated, which is very common if you grew up in the Pacific Northwest. There's a lot of Vietnam veterans who lived in the Pacific Northwest, so that kind of fits in that story. He also goes and visits one of his friends, played by Bill Duke, who is wearing old army attire like a veteran would, who's also living out in the woods in a trailer. And they have this connection that you kind of see that two people who've gone through a similar thing in their life. And so that you have this feeling like, yeah, they probably fought in the war and it probably not together, but they knew each other. Because they didn't have that closeness that somebody who fought side by side have, but they had that thing of, yeah, we went through this experience together. So, yeah, I feel like Mandy is important because she drives Nicolas Cage back to this old life that he had gotten rid of, and he then goes and seeks revenge.
Do you think Mandy gets lost in this story?
Well, this is the thing. I was staying with this last night after we watched the film, and so was Mandy ever really in the story? You could make an argument that Mandy was a creation of Nicolas Cage's mind, because the Mandy, not Mandy the person, because obviously there's this person who is in the first half that ends up getting killed, which drives the rest of the story. But the Mandy that we are seeing in the movie and the artist and the free spirit, that is all, you say that's from his remembrance, his nostalgia for her. Even though it's very new, you could make an argument that Mandy was never in the story. The real Mandy, quote unquote. But I think she does not get forgotten because of the way that he constantly is remembering her. Things that happen to him constantly remind him of her. Do you feel that Mandy gets lost in the story?
Sometimes I do. When I was doing research for this podcast, I love this movie, by the way. It was my turn to pick, and this was the movie that I chose to pick. I enjoy this movie, but while I was doing research for this movie, though Nicolas Cage is a big part of this film and also a big name, I couldn't find any interviews that centered on Riceboro's point of view of this movie.
Andrea Riceboro's.
I couldn't find anything that, and of course at that time she also was headlining another movie, so that could have taken precedent over this one.
What movie was that?
I think it was Nancy, but so I don't know if that was just, it was just poor timing and she was doing something for that as well as Mandy, but I couldn't find any. I found a lot of women's point of view of this movie.
Meaning critics?
Critics and people like me who enjoy watching movies and stuff like that. But I couldn't find any of her like interviews or anything like that. And when they're usually press tours, there's interview of some sort. It was usually the three of them. It was usually Nick Cage, Penis Cosmatos, and Linus Roach talking about it. And it's an interesting movie, and I think there's a lot of nuance you get from it while watching it. But I think even though it was written by two men and was directed by a man, I think there's a lot of feminist ideals in it. Even though he wrote it and stuff, there's so much more nuance to it that I think getting a woman's perspective is so much more interesting when you're talking about this movie, about how a lot of women, that though Mandy is technically like a updated version of the head in the fridge trope, but she allows to have this conversation about how women are viewed by men and how women are important to the male ego and how fragile the male ego is, which is very interesting in this movie.
Well, I think there's two things. One, you have two damaged souls, and Nicolas Cage's character and Andrea Riceboro's character, Mandy. You have Red and Mandy together. They obviously, Mandy physically has a scar on her face. Their life, their existence, they've come together, and he knows who he is at this point. She knows who she's at this point. And I feel like whatever their past has, it defines them, but they don't let it define them at this moment. And what you see with the Linus Roach character is that his failed past is all that defines him right now. Everything that he does, every movement that he makes with his cult that he's leading is to justify this failed career that he wanted to have, that he feels he wasn't allowed to have. But then God told him that, oh no, you just go out and get what you want. And so it justified him doing all these really horrible things to people. And so, it was also about maturity, not only in the female male viewpoint, like how fragile the male ego is, but also the maturity level of getting past a point where things like somebody not liking you, not saying they want to say negative you, doesn't send you over the deep end.
Well, the director, Panos Cosmatos, said that he didn't want to make a movie that was only for young frat boys. He didn't want to make a movie that was a testosterone filled movie. But he also wanted to like talk about the male ego and stuff. Do you think that he found the right balance of revenge and also sincerity?
I feel like he found the right balance because, well, I'll say this, by the end, he found the right balance. That's also kind of the point of the film, is that is the journey is really important. It's not just a paint-by-numbers horror film where some people are going to get killed at this scene and you set your stopwatch for 7 minutes and you know that somebody's going to be killed in 7 minutes. You know that this film is done differently by the way it's set up. There is a really long intro to the film where it sets up Mandy's character with Nicolas Cage, which is really important because if this guy is going to go back in on himself and go to a place he doesn't want to go, you need to see their relationship and how important it is and how they have built this relationship. Also, you have to see how fragile Linus Roach's cult leader is even before he's rejected by Mandy. You see how fragile he is. He's laying on the bed. He can't bring himself to get up. And it's a really, I think he plays this character very well. And some people could argue that he's playing it like this is he's playing it as if it's a generational character.
Well, there's this whole thing about like this thought experiment created by the author, Margaret Atwood, about how if you asked your male friends what they're most afraid of when it comes to women, they say to be laughed at. But if you ask your female friends about men, they would say that I would be killed or maimed in some way. And I think that scene right there, in the middle, is a perfect explanation of that thought experiment.
Where she laughs at him and that he doesn't know how to deal with it.
And so he murders her. You know, and it's kind of this hypocrisy in the sense of like this man who is supposed to be God's chosen creature to serve, to help humanity, can't even handle the fact that this one woman who is drugged out of her mind, by the way, forcefully drugged out of her mind, doesn't want to have intercourse with him because she's in love with somebody else.
Well, I also think there's a couple things here too. She does say to him, she says, he asked her what does she see when he's standing in front of her. And she says, I see the Reaper coming. And she's smiling. And you know, at this point, you're thinking, okay. And then he tries to get her to, you know, he tells her in this long monologue about this music that's playing, which is his song that he wrote, which the entire movie up at that point, she's wearing Black Sabbath t-shirts. She's wearing, I mean, they're all heavy metal type t-shirts. And there's a callback in her art that she draws to the magazine Heavy Metal, which is a very fantasy driven, art driven magazine from the 80s. And she obviously, this isn't her type of music, so she doesn't like it. But it also tells you just how this character's psyche is so fragile by the type of song it is. And so she's laughing at him because the song is bad and he's nothing to write home about when he's standing in front of her all naked. And so she just starts to laugh, but she also feels her own power because she realizes that no matter what happens, she's probably not going to get out of there. She knows that she's been in a situation in the past. She's where something has happened because she has a scar on her face. The way that the character is played is that there's a history to this person that is not good. They've gone through either an abusive relationship or something where they've been injured. And so she's comfortable with the fact that she's going to be strong in who she is at that moment, laugh him down, which is the most powerful thing she can do. And knowing that even if she gets killed, Nicolas Cage is come after that guy for her.
Yeah, she is pretty much a driving force within this movie. I know we just talked about how she could have gotten lost and things like that, but with the visions that Nicolas Cage's character has, even if it's just a figment of his imagination, she is definitely like the goddess looking over him, protecting him, continuing his journey, feeling his passion.
I also think it's very interesting that a lot of his flashbacks are animated in her art style. they're not of her in the world that's been created by this movie. So the way that he remembers her is through her art. And I think that's really, to me, that's really interesting. One of the reasons why I think some people can argue this Mandy get lost a little, the character Mandy get lost a little bit, is that the actress, after she's killed, doesn't really come back, even though there's flashbacks in the movie.
Until the very end.
In the very, very end. Yeah, and I think one of the things, too, for me, though, was that actually made it the driving force, it explained the driving force of Nicolas Cage going after the bad guys. It made it seem actually more personal because he had her art and her being, the thing that was, that to her was her most important thing, he had totally internalized at that point. So I think that, to me, made it a little, for me, when I was watching it, made it a much more personal choice.
Do you think this is a love story? Because I think it's a love story. At least generally the first half until, or the first hour and 15 minutes until before the Mandy title card comes up is definitely a love story. Do you think it's a love story?
Yeah. Well, so this is the thing. It has to be a strong love story because if you're going to have, like you said, the trope of a girl in the fridge, there has to be, you can't quote unquote see the death and then go, oh, well, it was good. So there has to be a strong emotional connection between the two characters. And then I view this more as just the standard plot triggering death, not necessarily the girl in the fridge, although there's elements of it, but.
Well, the frigid woman is a concept that we've seen throughout time. She doesn't need to be stuffed in a fridge for the male character to find an hour later after he's won a battle with the main bad guy. It's just about a woman who is either captured or murdered and is the starting plot of the man's journey.
Well, that's where I'm going to break from you. Usually the woman in the fridge trope is for the person to find. It does not happen in front of them, which is what happens in this movie, which is why I'm saying this is a plot triggering death, which is usually happens in front of the character, i.e. best friend gets killed in front of them. So the girlfriend gets killed in front of them. The family gets killed in front of them, which drives the character out.
Yes,
but I also understand that there are elements of the woman in the fridge trope that you were talking about, but for me, the fact that A, he doesn't have to find her, B, he doesn't, it's done in front of him to incite him. For me, kind of lessens that it's that kind of trope. But I feel like we're kind of like discussing tomato tomato here. They're both plot triggering. They're both are pushing the plot forward. They're both going to make the character go in a certain direction.
Well, my question is, as a movie, I love this movie. So don't get me wrong. I don't like this movie. I really do enjoy it. But my thing is, as a movie is called Mandy, what is the difference between Nicolas Cage dying and Mandy going on a murder spree? What is the difference?
Well, the difference would be, for me, it could be the same movie. It could literally be the same movie if Nicolas Cage, if Red died and Mandy was the one that went and did the crazy revenge to the rest of the movie, the roaring rampage of revenge, you could switch those two characters around and it would happen. If the character Mandy was capable of doing it, she would do it. I don't think.
And I also think she is doing it throughout the movie in the sense of, like, she's more of a cerebral character and Red is more of a muscle character, a brawn type character. And so she's smart enough to understand that she can get her, like you said before, like she can get her revenge even when she dies.
Yeah, no, I get that. So that's why I don't think of it as a traditional women in the fridge trope. For me, after watching all these murder mysteries, that trope is to me a very specific one. It's very much like it's very much like the body that's found in the closet, or the body that's found the when the hero runs into the house to see his wife dead or in the fridge, you know, literally in the fridge, or maybe not. To me, that's what that trope means. And the plot triggering death usually happens in front of the character, and literally that trope leads to a revenge spree. I also feel that we're arguing over, we're nitpicking.
Well, yes, I understand that you're nitpicking, but I wanted to state that even though Mandy is such a strong character in this movie, cerebrally in dreams and stuff like that, she's still a woman who dies. To the deaths that happen in front of people, they're usually girlfriends, wives, and children, which are, to start a man's story, which is what I wanted to point out. The director wanted to talk about the male ego and how fragile it could be and what that relationship is to with a woman. And I think with a movie like this, even though you don't technically really want her to die, I think she has to die to join that conversation. What scary men can be, how scary men can be, which is what the director wants to talk about. Well, there's many horror references throughout this movie that I thought was pretty fun. It's kind of natural nowadays for horror movies to make references to other horror movies, especially horror movies in the past, either with like cinematography and lining up of shots, or like references like the teacher in the beginning is called Mr. Voorhees or something like that. And it's kind of like a badge of honor in the sense of like, we are in the same category or we're in the same genre as these great films. And Mandy does this as well with like, I Live Up Near Crystal Lake. And of course, as a reference to Friday the 13th, there's stories where the director made Nicolas Cage watch like Jason's films and stuff like that about, and which Nicolas Cage took as a character direction during some of his fight scenes and things like that, that allow the 80s pop culture at the to be referenced. There's also a lot of musical elements to this movie, along with like stage directions and things like that. Like our first opening to this movie is a quote about when I die, please let me rock and roll forever, which is actually a quote from a murderer in Texas that was convicted and executed in 2005. Those were his last words, those opening credits. So this is Panos Cosmanos' second feature film. The first one being Beyond the Black Rainbow, which is another psychedelic movie. And he states that Beyond the Black Rainbow was an inhale of all the emotions that he was feeling at the time, because he wrote these two movies together. And Mandy was an exhale of these emotions, which, you know, the catharsis that people need to feel when they feel emotions like loss and grief and things like that. I read somewhere that he said that this was a movie that helped him with his parents' death, and that also helped Nick Cage. Nick Cage found this movie therapeutic because at the time, Nick Cage was going through his third divorce. He had broken his foot or ankle during another movie and was in a wheelchair for a couple of months, which made him angry. And he was still processing his own father's death, so he felt like he needed a catharsis, and he said, where are these emotions going to go? Well, they're going to go in Mandy, which is one of the reasons why I think this movie definitely starts this Nicolas Cage renaissance.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that connected me to it is that you can definitely see that Nicolas Cage, well, this movie could have been like a campy Nicolas Cage performance. I'm not going to say there's not Nicolas Cage moments in the movie. I'm just going to say that, but he played it fairly straight when he needed to. And then when it got crazier and he took a little bit of that drug and he got a little bit crazier in his actions, not necessarily yet. And it got level, and he kept on leveling up that, you know, he pushed it and kept on pushing it to the climax, which, so I enjoyed it because you can see that he decided to play this part as what you can see that he decided to play this part fairly straight. So it made it much more enjoyable for me, enjoyable film. Cause sometimes when an actor decides to go on these crazy binges or chew the scenery or whatever metaphor you want to use, even though it might be fun the first time you watch it, it's hard to watch it the second or third time because usually the performance isn't very deep. And this performance, to me, I can see watching this movie over and over again. I thought was interesting is that Panos Cosmatos used the royalties that he got off of his father. His father was George P. Cosmatos, who was a film director. He directed, his most famous films are Rambo, First Blood Part 2, and Tombstone. And so he used the royalties off of Tombstone, his father's royalties off of Tombstone, to help finance this picture. So I thought that was very interesting to me because it's like saying, oh, not only is he processing his father's passing and he's processing a lot of grief and loss in his life, but he's using part of that grief, some of the things that are coming to him from that grief to then make this movie to process it. So I thought it was kind of like a nice little circle of life thing going on. And so for me, that kind of was very interesting. So what did you think about Nicolas Cage's performance?
Well, I love Nicolas Cage. One of the reasons why I watched this movie in the first place was because someone told me it was a Nicolas Cage movie and that I would really enjoy it. Can't remember which friend it was, but at the time I had just broken up with my boyfriend at the time. And because I love Nicolas Cage so much, my friend said, you know what, we're going to have a girl night. We're going to have a girls and pals night in, and we're going to watch Mandy. And I just absolutely fell in love with this movie. And one of my favorite scenes about this movie is right after Mandy has passed away, there's this, like, lack for a better term, this one-act play plays out in this bathroom that lasts, you know, it's one cut, one camera angle, lasts maybe, 3 to 5 minutes, and it's just Nicolas Cage going ham in the bathroom and processing his grief, chugging about a bottle of vodka, cleaning his wounds, and processing his grief over Mandy's death. And it's such a Nicolas Cage performance in the sense of, like, what you think Nicolas Cage is known for, but it's so much more than that. It's beautiful in the sense of, like, he's feeling his loss and he's feeling his anger, and you can see that palpitating through the whole scene, and I really enjoy that scene, and that's, like, when I fell in love with this movie.
I don't think he goes as ham as you say he does. I think what he does is he just watched his girlfriend get burned in front of him. So I would probably freak out like he did.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why I enjoyed this movie is because it's the same Nicolas Cage that was in The Vampire's Kiss and the same Nicolas Cage that was in National Treasure. But It's even though he's going ham, there's this depth to it that the other performances didn't have.
This movie is kind of out there. It has a very surrealistic point of view. It's the way it's shot, the way you move through the story, that I think sometimes some of the reviews that I read kind of made me not want to see it because I thought, oh, they're just going out there to make, how do I say that? Like a campy retro film that's going to be a fun ride for everybody. And I was like, I don't really want to do a campy retro film. I want a film. If I'm going to spend the time, I want a film that's going to, even if it's retro and it's done really well, like Stranger Things, or you kind of get in there and you go, okay, this is retro. They're going after a time period. They're going after a certain style of filmmaking too, but it's integrated to the story and it's not dictating how the story is told. I'll enjoy that. But the way that some of the reviews came off, made me feel like, oh, they're just making this film to kind of make fun of old horror films in the 80s, and they're going to go kind of retro and whatever. And so I didn't really check it out. And then you said, no, we're going to watch it because it's really good. And I was pleasantly surprised. And I really, now I'm questioning some of these reviewers. I don't know if they actually saw the same movie that I saw, or they just saw that Nicolas Cage was in it and they said, okay, this whole thing's a joke. I don't know. I felt like the reviews that I read didn't give this film a fair shake. Even though they were quote unquote positive reviews, they weren't really diving into what made this film so good. They were kind of surface level reviews. I have now since read some reviews since the movie's come out, people who have digested it and, you know, over the last two, three years and said, they make more sense to me. They're people who've actually watched it and dissected it. And so I think this movie is going to be one of those movies that over the next 10 years will be one of those movies that's going to build up steam and people are going to really enjoy watching. It's also, I think, another thing as for a horror film, because as you know, I hate horror films.
Which is one of the reasons why I made you watch this movie.
Yeah, and the reason I hate horror films, it's not because of horror genre. It's because a lot of times they're not morally truthful. What I mean by morally truthful, and this is kind of me on a high horse, I'm sorry, is that they set up these worlds and then they don't follow them, and they really just want to show you shock, gore, and people getting killed and, you know, things like that. And even some of the ones that are more psychological than the actual gory, they fall apart because they don't follow their own rules that they set up in their world. Because if they did, they usually write themselves into a corner, and then they go, oh, darn it. Well, there's this rule that we didn't tell you about where now this happens so that the story can go forward. And so I find them, for me, very hard to watch because you can kind of see what's going on. You can kind of anticipate what's going to happen, and usually they don't live up to what you want them to live up to. So I've seen, like you, in my early 20s, I binged a lot of them. So I got really burnt out of that. And over time, though, I have watched some really great ones. I've watched some really great horror films or films with horror aspects to them that I think are some of my favorite films have horror aspects to them. I mean, Brazil, which is done by Terry Gilliam, has a definite horror aspect because even though it's a very surreal film and there's all these other things happening in it, there's the underlying bits of the horror genre in there. And so you can see that this is somebody who was influenced by all the movies he watched. It's just what I'm just saying is that you can watch great films with horror aspects and they're really good. Sometimes, though, I watch horror films and I just hate them. So I really started not liking them. And so I was surprised, but I also think the real reason I like this film is it doesn't require, it is not, you could literally take out a lot of the quote unquote horror gore elements and this movie would still work. I think that's what I'm trying to say in a long way around the making a very short story long. I think what I'm trying to say is that most good horror films, if you take out the horror elements, the gore elements, the plot and the story should still work.
Well, one of the things that I really enjoy about horror films, especially horror films that are coming out in today's world, there's this new directional take that horror film is using to discuss human emotion. Look, it's always been about human emotion. It's always been about things that we have dealt with. There's many, many literary articles about why zombies and vampires come in and out of fashion, and it's all based on history happening at that time. And it's all about the human experience. But one of the things that I really enjoy about horror films that are coming out today is that the horror is a metaphor for something bigger. Like, this movie is about grief and loss and how to deal with those emotions outwardly. And there's, you know, there's Get Out, which it talks about racism and the Black experience. And there's also movies like Relic that just came out less than a year ago. It's a female-led movie about how to deal with illness generationally. And I think those movies add to the horror genre in the sense of the monsters either are, you know, like the Babadook, either the monsters are like real things that are personifications of things. Like the Babadook is about grief and depression, or it can be in your mind, like Relic, where it's the whole house is deteriorating and it's idea about what your mind goes through with dementia and stuff like that.
And I think the thing is that I like about some of the new modern stuff that I have seen is that in general, they are really, how to say this? In general, they're really well thought out and well made, and they're really trying to talk about something. You'll get tricked into another movie. You'll start watching another one that is shot very, you know, very lavishly and stuff like that. And then you realize, oh no, this is a pretty much an empty horror film. That's basically a guy who is another movie about a guy's ego that he's afraid of, and he's going to deal with these issues. So I don't know. I find when I get a number of people saying, this is a really good movie, and I read a couple of reviews that explain, that go into what makes this movie good, then I usually will go into a horror film nowadays. It takes a lot for me to watch a horror film, and I'm the first one to go, nope, if I start seeing the flaws, or I start seeing, oh, this isn't really going to pay off. This metaphor really isn't a metaphor, you know, and that's one of the things that I find really frustrating about the horror genre is that you get some really great filmmakers in there. In fact, you get some filmmakers who spend most of their life in that genre and are really good at it. Even when they're making pretty genre-making films, like they're just going to make a straightforward horror film. And it's really interesting. It's a good horror film. It's like when you watch a straightforward Western or straightforward, you know, murder mystery. Something has to be said for when you do that film version really well, even if it's not stretching the genre. But unfortunately, you have to wade through a lot of stuff right now.
Oh, I totally understand with what you're saying about wading through things, because 2020 happened, as everybody knows, and as a lot of things were shutting down, not a lot of movies were posted, except for the Z list, like the bottom of the barrel horror films, except for Relic, which is one of the reasons why I talk about it so much, is because it's the only good horror film that I've seen within a year. You know, everything else was like a random slasher film with the girl in the heels running away from the zombies, you know?
And that's the thing I really enjoyed about this film, is that whether or not you go in this film with all the references that the film has, whether you're talking about the whole number 44 thing that a lot of people really enjoy online, talking about his shirt where he wears number 44, there's a whole bunch of stuff where people like list the number 44. Or you can talk about the fact that he has a tiger shirt on, and then later on there's a tiger. What is that reference? And that kind of stuff. There's a lot of things in this film that you can sit there and you can enjoy and then talk about afterwards and really get into what does this mean, what does that mean, which makes this film worth watching.
Yeah, 100%. I love this movie because it's not... I watched it the first time with a bunch of my friends who don't particularly enjoy horror films, and actually one of them who doesn't enjoy horror films recommended it to me. And so when watching it, it was like a fun movie to watch with your friends, and I could explain to them what these references mean or not, and it still wouldn't have mattered as a horror fan or not a horror fan. It's a beautiful movie to watch, It's the cinematography, the colors that he uses, the weird psychedelic editing that he uses, like especially the one scene where Jeremiah and Mandy's face, like for 2 minutes, Jeremiah stares at you on the screen and Mandy's face comes in and out. So they're like morphing and stuff like that. And you're like, what is happening? My brain is melting. I really enjoyed that part of those parts of this movie because it just adds to the whole... It adds to the whole experience. And if you don't have a good experience watching a movie, then why watch it?
One of the things that you liked about this film was how it historically fit in women, how women are portrayed in horror, and how it's on the new forefront about how we're reexamining women's roles in horror. And I think that's kind of cool because, yes, you're right. It's even though the woman still dies in this movie, there is definitely a reexamination of how women are portrayed in this film. And I thought that was, you brought up some good points. So I wanted you to give you a chance to talk about how the Mandy character was a shift from how this character would have been portrayed in the 1980s. Because I can tell you exactly how it would have been portrayed in the 1980s if this was made in a horror film. Even if it was trying not to be kids going to a cabin in the woods type story, she would probably been more of an idealized character, and she definitely would have been portrayed more sexual.
Well, that was one of the things that when you asked me that question the first time that I would think about, the first thing that I would think about is we would have seen a lot more of her body. She's not modestly dressed in the sense that she has a collar up to her underneath her chin and a dress up down to her ankles. She's just dressed like a human being, which I thought was very interesting. You know, she's wearing a muscle tee and jeans, and the only time that we see her in a moderately skimpy clothing is when she's wearing a pajama shirt. You know, those long shirts that you wear to bed, you know. And in the 80s, this movie, even though Jeremiah Sands does try to have intercourse with her, he doesn't do it forcefully, which I thought was very interesting in the sense that he's a villain asking a woman who he thinks that he owns because of the fact that he is, in his brain, you know, the next coming of Jesus. You can argue that he does because of all the stuff that he does, but he doesn't rough her up. There's no sex in this movie, even though they talk about sex a lot. And there's a porno happening in the background and things like that. But even the two main characters, their love is a lot more in the sense that they're like in love with each other's minds. I thought was very interesting is that Mandy has control of her body throughout this whole movie, and in the 80s she would not have had any control of her body. She's moderately dressed, which I think is a real plus, you know. She's not given the final girl role. The final girl role is like the girl who is morally okay to be saved and to be the end person in the movie. You know, she's usually a virgin. She's usually the smartest girl. She's usually not like other girls, you know, things like that. And Mandy's not given that role, but she's also not given the slutty cheerleader role, you know, in the sense of like, you know, she's promiscuous and she's, you know, wearing short t-shirts and heels and things like that. She's not given that role either, which I thought was very interesting because those two roles are in most horror films, you know, the slutty girl is the first to go and the final girl saves the world, you know, things like that. And Mandy is just her own person. She's not a stereotype, which I thought was very interesting. There's a lot of things when it comes to horror films in the sense of like there's two ways to view a female, and you know, Freud said it best when he said it was the Madonna horror complex. And you know, either she's a saint or she's not. And you can see that throughout horror films and throughout horror film history. You know, there's this like fascination with women's bodies. You know, in the 1930s, there was that virginal sacrifice and think in Dracula and things like that. And then you get more and more, and it's about, you know, women. There, you got women's characters, also their powers are focused on their body. So there's also this like belief, like either she's a monstrous temptress and she's like the ruiner of men, and then it involves into this like, if you are sexual in any way, then you must be punished. Usually, you know, it's a woman, you know, has sexual intercourse and then she gets murdered, or during sexual intercourse she gets murdered. There's also this like idea that there's a lot of mystical pregnancies within horror, which also limits the women's role to only a bodily function, where usually a woman is either impregnated by Satan or Antichrist, or a demon is inside her, and then there's this whole like idea that she's the only thing that can bring evil into the world. Even when it's like a female led flick, so like definitely in the 90s, in this female flick era, it's her story usually starts with a violence against her, and usually it's like sexual assault or attempted sexual assault or something similar to that. That's just violence towards women, and then she all of a sudden holds on to these male traits, which I find really annoying, which I thought was really cool in Mandy, is that Mandy is a woman and she has feminine traits. You know, she likes drawing. I'm not saying drawing's feminine, but I'm saying she likes drawing. She has long hair. She's, you know, she's in a sense really cares about her surroundings. There's a scene where she's like sad that a fawn has died and things like that. And so she's emotional, but she's not faulted for that. With these female-led revenge flicks, they usually are just a really hot woman with male traits, which is different than a masculine woman, because a masculine woman can still hold on to feminine ideals and things like that. But with these characters, she's usually wearing short shorts and a tank top, and all of a sudden is like tough and she's strong, and the character's still seen for her body. And one of the things that I really enjoy about Mandy is that even though she's an eye of sexual desire, she's never like paraded around like that. And I think this really leads into the horror films that we are seeing today, because like Relic and Us, these female-led movies focus on women, but other than women's bodies and their sexuality being a main theme in this movie, maybe it's even about like her focus as her as a mother or as her own person, which I think is a really good step forward in the horror genre, because there are those jokes throughout many horror parodies and even horror films themselves of like that blonde, like it's definitely like Paranorman, that first scene that comes to mind, where it's that blonde-haired, blue-eyed cheerleader in high heels running away from the zombies, and even though she has multiple exits and plenty of time to save herself, she's just sitting in the room screaming, and then the camera comes down, the mic comes down, she pushes it out of the way, because she's like, it's one of my, that's kind of how horror film was in the 80s, and now we're starting to focus on women as people, which I think is really interesting. So I know that you really enjoyed this film. Would you recommend it?
Yeah, I recommend it because it reminded me of some of the, like I said, some of the midnight movies from the 80s that actually, a lot of those midnight movies were made in the 70s and 80s. Some of them made in the 60s that I watched when I was a kid back then. So I really enjoyed this film, because it brought me back, but also because it didn't try to recapture that. It just used it as a starting point, made it with its own unique voice. So I enjoyed that. I mean, it, in a weird sort of way, the beginning kind of reminded me of the openings to like Rambo or First Blood or Red Dawn, like the very, but there's an ominous in the opening. So you know that there's something's going to happen. It kind of reminded me of those type of film openings, which aren't horror films, but First Blood, he's just walking down the street, the highway, and you know just the way that it's shot is something's going to happen. Like the first scene that you see in this movie, the way it's shot, you just know this film is going to go, that there's the sky is gray, the trees are kind of oppressive in their framing, everybody doesn't seem super happy to be with where they're at. So you just kind of know this movie is going to go down a certain path. They're letting you know visually. But I really enjoyed it. I would recommend this film for people who don't like horror films because, like I said, the horror is minimal and you could kind of skip over the horror parts and still get the best parts of the story. I would recommend this film for people who are Nicolas Cage fans and kind of like are enjoying this Nicolas Cage resurgence. And then I also would recommend it for people who really want to look at how to make a psychedelic or surreal film and not bore the pants off of people.
Yeah, that's 100%. This movie is psychedelic, but it's not too crazy that you can't really understand.
So would you recommend this movie to anybody?
I would recommend this movie to everyone. I love Nicolas Cage and I like horror films, and they're the two things that I love put together. I would recommend it similar to you. Anybody who is a horror movie fan who doesn't like horror, who wants to start like getting into some things, because you know horror is becoming a big element in movie storytelling in Hollywood these days, I definitely would start with Mandy. I love it. It's beautiful. It's colorful. You know, it has Nick Cage. You can't go wrong.
Well, thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. We will be posting a new show every Tuesday. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to our podcast. Leave a review and follow us on Instagram at TML, A Journey Through Cinema, and on Twitter at TML, A Journey. We also have a Facebook page under The Movie Log. You can find all our social media and past episodes on www.themovielogjourneythroughcinema.buzzsprout.com. Next week, we will be discussing a funny spy thriller.